Welcome back to Maryland Today. My name is Jeff St. Pierre, and it is the holiday season, and with that comes a lot of stress for a lot of people. Dr. Rick Hansen is joining us today, author of Just One Thing, Developing a Buddha Brain, One Simple Practice at a Time. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Hansen.
It's a pleasure.
I have to say, I've had the chance to get through most of the book so far, and I'm finding it really fascinating. You have put together one great piece of work here.
I appreciate that. I know you don't have to say that, and I appreciate it.
You know, I think of myself as a fairly relaxed person, but even I get stressed out around this time, you know, the holiday season. You hear about that a lot. Why is that kind of thing so common with people?
Well, I think the holidays themselves put a lot of pressure on us from different angles. They lay on top of people who are already among the busiest in the entire planet, which is saying something, even busier than the Japanese by some accounts in terms of work weeks, and that's really saying something. So you lay on top of those pressures, you know, the running around, doing errands, doing tasks, things like that, and then psychological pressures. It stirs up memories often for people from childhood, not even necessarily conscious memories, but more like just sort of feelings in the back of their mind related to the holidays when they were a kid, either longings for good times that they had and are hard to come by these days, or, you know, tension. There's often a lot of family tension around the holidays and some kind of, you know, the parents drink too much often and get into fights and who knows what will happen next. So for various reasons, this gets stirred up. And then it lands on, as I go into the book, and we really do have a brain that evolved over 600 million years, literally, of the evolution of the nervous system. And that brain in that body altogether is very reactive to stress. Same hair trigger stress mechanisms that evolved to get us away from charging tigers back in the Serengeti are alive and well today when somebody gets mad at us or irritated or, you know, we're stuck in traffic or we're juggling too many emails or we're trying to get a toddler into a car seat. And so then, or, you know, dealing with holiday madness, trying to, you know, get that thing we want for that 10-year-old kid. Anyway, so all that gets stirred up in us. And so my book's basically about those little tiny things that are actually grounded in brain science that people can do right in the trenches to reset their own brain and tip it to a better place.
Now, in the book, you talk about this concept of a Buddha brain. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Yeah, the way I'm using it, it's a universal term, not restricted to any particular faith tradition. In other words, the original meaning of the word Buddha is simply, you know, deep understanding, one who knows truly what it is to be strong, happy, and peaceful. And so for me, since we have essentially a human brain, you know, we all have a human brain, that brain can be tipped, can be trained, because as I say in neuroscience, neurons that fire together wire together. The brain is continually changing. The only question is it changing for the better or the worse, and who's doing the changing, right? And so we're all interested in having a brain that knows how to be truly strong, happy, and calm and peaceful, and not at war with others. And so that's a brain that's available for anyone, Christian, Jewish, none of the above, et cetera. And so for me, that's what I meant about developing a Buddha brain. And I'm very excited about the ways truly in science it's becoming increasingly clear that you really can change the brain for the better over time.
Yeah, and something that pops up in the book quite a few times is that our brain tends to go straight to the negative thoughts and negative memories. Why is it that our brains just seem to want to go that way automatically?
I know. It's one of the most interesting things about the brain. Well, back when we were evolving, you know, we had to chase carrots and get sticks. But if you failed to get a carrot today, you'd probably have a chance at a carrot tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But if you failed to avoid a stick today, whap, no more carrots forever. Sticks had more urgency and impact than carrots did. You know, the very first emotion we evolved was fear. And, you know, rule one in the wild is eat lunch today. Don't be lunch today, right? So we have what scientists call a negativity bias kind of woven into our brain that, as I put it, makes the brain like Velcro for negative experiences, but Teflon for positive ones. You know, think about a person you have a relationship with, you live with, you work with, you sleep with, you grew up with, what have you. Maybe 10 things happen in a day. 5 are mildly positive, 4 are neutral, 1's mildly negative. What's the one you think about? It's the negative one, right? Because that's the one that we have to pay attention to. And there's research, for example, that shows that long-term happy couples need at least a 5-to-1 ratio of positive to negative interactions. In effect, one single negative interaction is as powerful as 5 positive ones. Or the way the brain works, like I said, about the Velcro thing, you know, negative experiences get registered immediately. Once burned, twice shy. You know, you always remember that hot stove or that scary, you know, kind of dog. But positive experiences, unless they're million-dollar moments, have standard issue memory systems, which means that they pass through the brain like water through a sieve, unless you really savor them 10, 20, 30 seconds in a row so they can transfer to long-term storage. But how often do we actually do that? We might be having one positive experience after another, but we're not savoring it. We're not sensing that they go in. So that's why actually the second practice in the book is called Taking in the Good, because to me it's so important and so powerful. Half a dozen times a day, quietly, privately, let, you know, a good fact become a good experience, and then really stay with it 10, 20, 30 seconds in a row to help it sink into you. And then four, you can gradually weave positive resources into the fabric of your brain and yourself.
You know, it's funny, an example of that and one of the examples I was reading about when I got a little synopsis of your book in the first place. It actually happened to me today. I had an orange for breakfast, and when I was peeling it, all I could think about was that I bought the kind with seeds and about this tiny bad spot that was on it. Now, in the book, you talk about, you know, forget about the bad spot. Forget about the seeds. Focus more on how great it smells and how great it tastes instead.
That's right, and I'm a big believer in, you know, I'm a practical guy. I'm in my 60th year, raised two kids with my wife, married nearly 30 years. On Valentine's Day, my wife said I'd never forget our wedding anniversary if we had it on Valentine's Day.
That's true.
Anyway, and so, yeah, I've been in business and things, as well as been a psychologist for a very long time. And, you know, I'm a big believer in seeing the bad things. In other words, it's really important to recognize the real tigers out there, as it were, you know, including the seeds or the bad spots in the orange, and think twice about that particular grocery store, maybe that in the future, what have you. You know, it's important to see the difficult things in life, for sure, and not put our heads in the sand about them. That said, the brain is biased toward those negative things. It's continually scanning for them. There's an ongoing background trickle of anxiety in us that keeps us vigilant. For some people, it's more of a stream or a flood. And then when we find those bad things, we ignore the positive and glom onto the bad. And so for me, that worked great when we were living in Stone Age cavemen, right? Because then things were really, really harsh. And also most people were dead by their 30th birthday. So the short-term benefits of the stress reactions that this negativity bias, you know, hauls us through, like riding a roller coaster, those stress reactions made sense because their long-term cost, the physical and mental health, didn't matter. But these days, my dad's 93, grew up on a ranch in North Dakota, 1918, born there. And he's still spry and doing well. Ladies like him, you know? He's got all his hair still. Can you imagine? Anyway, you know, we all want to live longer. And so the daily toll of these stress reactions that were good for us back in the Stone Age are bad for us today. They're like, in effect, a design flaw in the brain in the 21st century. So the brain is tilted against quality of life and long-term health and longevity. And so to deliberately look for positive facts, true, good facts, and then let them become good experiences so they sink in. That's just one of the 52 methods in the book. Still, by doing that, by tilting towards the positive, you just level the playing field. And so what the book's about is taking charge of the brain, being self-reliant in this way, and, you know, gradually, you know, in ways that are practical and sensible and small and everyday, can be woven into everyday life, gradually taking charge of that brain, like driving a truck, you know, you're learning how to do it and then guiding it to a better place.
Yeah, the book is broken up into 52 chapters, basically, each one of them being a different practice. And it is very
short.
Yeah, very short, very simple to understand. There were a couple that stood out to me. Oddly enough, they were all in the be at peace section. So I don't know if that says anything about my situation right now.
Well, you're a busy guy.
Well, the risk, the dreaded experience chapter, you make a great point. You know, we're conditioned to fear the risk more than we are to celebrate the potential reward of going out there to do something.
I think that one's very interesting. And it goes to, you know, I've been a therapist, like I said, a long time. And it's made me nicer, I think, but it's also made me tougher because I've learned that you got to earn it. Mm-hmm. You know, I see people kind of poo-pooing psychology or personal growth or, you know, any kind of self-help or let alone psychotherapy. And I think you're missing it. I've done rock climbing. I've done real mountain things, really hairy situations. And truly, there's little as frightening as the experiences, the feelings, really, that we're afraid to have. And it takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of guts to face them. But those dreaded experiences, largely learned in childhood, either based on things that happened to us directly or actually very often things we saw happening to others around us and we wanted to make sure never happened to me or we imagined could happen to us, those dreaded experiences become like the bars of our cage and they hem us in. they fence us in. And so in the book I talk about helping yourself realize in very specific, small, manageable ways that you truly could afford to risk expressing yourself more fully, you know, saying what you really think, asking for the love you want, starting that business, dreaming a bigger dream, being less kind of fearful and constrained and inhibited and locked in around other people. And then when you take that small step and realize that it actually goes well, it almost always goes well, then take in that good, really let that in. And that's, for me, a really fantastic way to gradually step out of this cage, you know, that we constructed for ourselves. It made sense when we were a kid, okay, but it's trapping us today.
And I love the way you put it, too, in just one thing. It's small steps. I mean, each chapter is only a couple of pages long, and they're very easy to understand. We're not talking about all these big scientific words or anything. I mean, they're very practical, and that's one of the things I really loved about the book.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That's what I wanted to write. You know, it's the basic idea that little things can make a big difference over time. You know, it's the power. It's lots of little things that usually get us to a stressed out, irritated, anxious, cranky, you know, bummed kind of place. And it's going to be lots of little things that get us to a better one.
Right. And stressed out, irritated, anxious, a lot of those things describe holiday shoppers around this time of year. Do you have any little suggestions that maybe people listening right now will be able to take into this holiday season? I mean, we're almost there anyway, but it's something that can help it make it a little easier for them.
Oh, yeah. And these are definitely things that I do myself. So I know them from the inside out. Well, I'd say in addition to, you know, the idea of the core idea of taking in the good, two real fast ones. One is I have a little chapter in there on very powerful ways to actually relax in real time. In other words, a little detail here, we have this stress response machinery in our bodies, but we also have this calming, soothing antidote, wing of the nervous system. I mean, a fancy word alert, it's called the parasympathetic nervous system. Anyway, you can activate this calming, soothing, cooling wing of your own nervous system by doing long exhalations because it's involved in exhaling. So if you make yourself, let's say, again, no one will know you're doing this usually, make yourself exhale about twice as long as you're inhaling, that will immediately flip a switch and start bringing this needle of your stress meter, you know, your inner stress meter, back out of the red into orange or yellow, who knows, maybe even a little green. So that's one thing people can do, and there are several other little practices in that chapter on relax. A second thing in real time is to actually notice that you're all right now. And that's very important because Mother Nature is continually whispering to us that we're not all right now because she doesn't want us to get confident, you know, living in the jungle. But these days, most moments, people actually are basically all right. Sometimes you're not basically all right. You know, a terrible thing has happened. And we're not talking here about the power of positive thinking, rose-colored glasses, or lying to yourself. Everything I write about is about being grounded in reality, feet on the earth. But when you are all right now, you know, you're not a millionaire. I'm not a millionaire. But you're basically okay. Notice it. You know, there you are standing in line. Okay. It's a hassle. You got to wait. But you're basically all right. You know, no bombs are going off in your, marketplace or at the bus stop. You're breathing. You're okay. You're not starving. The lights are on. The computer system still seem to work. You still have cell access, you know, you've got clothes on, you ain't dead yet, right? And you're going to go home and have a cookie or something. It's okay. You're all right in this moment. And then letting that little experience of feeling all right in this moment sink in over and over again, it really can help people over time shift the setting internally so they feel less anxious, they feel less subtly braced or guarded, you know, against life, and more confident, stronger inside. You know, you build up resources inside, so they give you a sense of inner strength. And then also, honestly, when we feel basically all right, we feel less beleaguered or hassled or threatened, we treat other people better. And, you know, the world is a little more benevolence these days.
Well, the book is called Just One Thing, Developing a Buddha Brain, One Simple Practice at a Time. Dr. Rick Hansen, if anybody would like to find out more information about you and your work, is there a website out there they can check?
Yeah, my name, Rick Hansen, S-O-N, rickhansen.net, and that'll take you to it. It's a website, by the way, that's chock full of free resources. I'm a big believer in giving it away, and so there are all kinds of talks I've given, many, many videos, many slide sets from workshops I've taught for both the general public and therapists, the people who are perfectly well to you know, they can freely share them if they like, as well as links to other good things. So thank you.
Yeah, Dr. Hansen, thank you so much. I really can't thank you enough for this. It's been a great interview, and I really appreciate you taking some time.
Oh, my pleasure.
And thank you for joining us today. We'll see you again next week.